Hello and welcome back to Franklin Covey's twice weekly podcast on Leadership with Scott Miller. That's me. I'm your host each week, where on Tuesdays and Fridays, we interview some of the most fascinating people in the world with the intention of making you better, more effective, more trustworthy, a better leader, a better spouse, parent, partner, teacher, educator, leader, contributor, friend, human being. Franklin Covey, of course, is the most trusted leadership firm in the world, founded by Dr. Stephen R. Covey of the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People fame and his friend and partner, Hiram Smith, who invented kind of the father of time management. And if you ever had a time management tool from the Franklin Covey planner, it probably set you up well for your career. For 6 years, we've been shining our spotlight on not just our own thought leaders, people like Chris McChesney, Corey Kogan, Stephen M. R. Covey, and others. We also like to shine the spotlight on other people that we think have paid the price to bring you some discipline, some research, a recovery from their trauma, or just their own experience to better educate you and make you a better leader. Today, our guest is the author Arlen Hamilton, written several books with a new book coming out called Your First Million. That got your attention. Why You Don't Have to Be Born into a Legacy of Wealth to Leave One Behind. Joining us from her office and home in Los Angeles, California, Arlen, welcome to On Leadership.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So the fact of the matter is, we invited you on, gosh, about 6 or 8 months ago for a previous book. And although it was like our 280th podcast interview, we had a nightmare of technical problems. And I just want our audience to know that you are a very in-demand speaker, entrepreneur, funder, investor, coach. And you hung in there for 25 minutes, right? Our team did their best to get their act together. You were very gracious. It didn't work out. 6, 8 months later, you graciously gave us a second chance to come back on to talk about your first million. So, A, thank you for that. Sometimes second chances are the best ones. Will you take a few minutes, Arlen, and will you reorient all of our listeners and viewers to your journey? Because you've become a very in-demand speaker, coach, author, advisor, investor. But not everyone may know what your journey is, because it's not the obvious journey to becoming an investor in businesses. Talk about how you got to where you are, and we'll dive deeper into the book.
Yes. Well, thanks for having me, and I appreciate the second chance here. About a decade ago, well, I was in my early 30s. I was homeless. I was, or mid-30s, I was homeless. I was sleeping on the floor of the San Francisco airport. It had come to that. And I was on this mission to start a venture fund to invest in founders, and specifically founders who were women, people of color, and LGBTQ+, which I identify as all three. And fast forward to today, my fund and I have invested in more than 200 of those companies with those leaders, and it's been quite a journey. But that's the nutshell version of it. And kind of going back just a little bit, I was raised in Dallas and had always had these great ideas and worked on different projects, but just couldn't quite make things work out and make ends meet. And stumbled upon Silicon Valley in my early 30s, the concept of it, and found my people, I thought. And it kind of started a journey to having Silicon Valley better represented.
Arlen, you write very vulnerably about your journey, a history of addiction, recovery, hard work, vision, work ethic. Can you tell us what led specifically to ending up homeless, sleeping on the San Francisco airport floor? I mean, I ask this question because I'd like people to realize what were some of the decisions that ended up culminating in that, in the hopes that other people might see some warning signs in their own life or in their children. Mm-hmm. And make it more instructive to for parents and leaders or entrepreneurs who may have, you know, made one bet too many or made one wrong decision. What is there to glean from that?
Yeah, I don't think, like, the addiction caused the homelessness. I think the homelessness caused the addiction, for instance. So I don't know if there were certain decisions that were made. I think that You know, when I was a child, we didn't have much. My mother worked two jobs and still couldn't make ends meet. And, you know, she grew up in Jackson, Mississippi. There's generational trauma there, financial trauma there, to say the least. And I think that maybe she wasn't as equipped to put me on the right path for financial wealth and success. And then as an adult, you know, I think after I've studied and been around so many now of these tech giants, I think I was in the same headspace as the tech giants. I just didn't have the right resources and connections. And I didn't necessarily have the people to recognize that in me the same as others. So I didn't go to college, for instance. And I think, you know, not going to college was a decision. I did not want to leave my family in the state that they were in financially, and I didn't feel comfortable going to a campus for 4 years, even though I had received scholarships. But I will say that the cool thing now is that my mother and I have $1 million worth of scholarships at Oxford University, the first of its kind, at Dillard University, and at Harvard Law.
So there. Let's talk a little bit about your journey. You are the founder of Backstage Capital, and one of the motivators, as you alluded to early, is your research showed that I think 90%+ of venture capital money went to white men historically, and you've been on a journey to help broaden that to women, to people of color, to members of the LGBTQ+ community. Talk about some of the passion and success that you are having there.
Yeah, I mean, you said that number out loud, and you can tell that that's not right, right? It's white men make up about 30% of the U.S. and they receive 90% of the funding. So I had a lot of white men friends at the time, like when I started, who didn't know that statistic. And when I told them, they thought it was outrageous. And many of them went on to invest in my fund as I met more and more people. And so today, Mark Cuban is one of them. He's invested $6 million in Backstage Capital, 2019 and 2020. And we've had the enterprise value of our portfolio is in the billions. We've helped create thousands of jobs, and we're looking forward to the future where we'll see hopefully many exits.
So I'm going to have you teach some concepts today about how to earn your first million. But first, I want to talk about Janet Jackson and a particular truck, because you tell a great story in the book that's just a preamble to a lot of great stories. Will you take your time, talk about the role that Janet played in your life and then a particular incident involving a truck?
Yeah. So when I was 13, I was just in love with Janet. I looked up to her, admired her so much. We couldn't afford tickets to her show, but my mother did surprise me with a ticket to her concert when I was 13 years old in Dallas, Texas. I went to the concert. She put some earrings on me to make me look older because she couldn't afford that second ticket. So she was sending me in to the Wolves, and she's sitting outside in the car. And I was sitting there a little nervous. Someone walks up to me and offers me a front row seat. I didn't believe him at first, but I let him walk with me to the front row. I get there and I'm greeted and I'm in the front row at a Janet Jackson concert, my first concert ever. Turns out it was her partner at the time, and Janet likes to seed her front row with a lot of excited and excitable fans so she can have that right energy for herself. So it was just a transformative day for me and an event for me. Meant so much to me in many ways, and I've spent the last 30 years just continuing to admire her. In 2021, she had a life, auction of a lifetime in Beverly Hills, 1,300 items, I believe. And the centerfold item was a truck that meant a lot to her, an antique truck that meant a lot to her. And it came with a 10-minute phone call. So I had it in my head, I'm going to go for this. I don't think I'll get it because Kim Kardashian and Christina Aguilera are also bidding, but I'm going to go for it. And so the beginning of my book, Your First Million, transports you to that moment and that day and tells you what happens next.
So we'll leave the outcome of that story to the reader of the book. Let's talk about a concept you open with called radical self-belief. Who doesn't need to have more of that? What does that mean, and why is it vital to someone's first million?
Yes, I've been in rooms across the country on my book tour this year, and I'll usually ask the room, how many people here believe that they can make $1 million if they haven't already? And that is usually about half the room, no matter what the room is made up. And then I'll ask who believes that they deserve to make $1 million. And it's even more surprising that there are a few hands up in the air. And to me, that's just shocking. And so no matter who you are, if you have felt underestimated, you're my audience. I'm talking to you. And we do not have time for imposter syndrome. We do not have time for self-doubt in a world where so much is going on, first of all, but also we only get so many years on the earth in this body, in this form. And it really is, I think it's up to us, and I think we owe each other the better versions of ourselves. And so that's what I strive for, and that's what I hope is the takeaway when people talk to me, read my books, meet me, is that I believe in you. I believe in myself. I have such confidence in myself because I have such confidence in others. And I believe that you deserve the radical belief and the audacity to be yourself.
Arlen, expand on that a little bit. You write also about this concept that everybody is an expert. Everybody has some expertise. How, it's a pretty audacious statement. We use the word expert pretty carelessly a lot increasingly. some people use it more judiciously. How do you define expertise, and how does someone uncover what theirs is?
I mean that everyone, you don't have to necessarily have gone to a certain school or have a certain, dare I say, breeding to be an expert in something. I think there's an experience level. I think we can all agree that if you have a certain level of experience in something that you can become expert and can be considered that. And each of us, what the point I'm making in the book is that each of us has the experience of being ourselves. And so there are a lot of intersectional things that happen with your lived experience, not necessarily only your education or your work. And so, if you combine the education and the work that you've done and the experiences that you've had with your lived experience as a human, whatever that is, all the things that you might consider to be knocks against you or something that you have to overcome, those combine to give you expertise. A great example is myself. I couldn't be the person that you have described a couple of times in this interview. I couldn't be all of those things if I didn't have the lived experience that I had and what makes me, because that is what people are reacting to. That is why I'm getting into rooms. That is why Mark Cuban invested in me. When I asked him why he invested in my fund, when he does not like to invest in other people's funds, he likes to directly invest in companies, he said without missing a beat, you are in rooms I'll never be in. The reason I'm in rooms he'll never be in is because I am me. And that I think that goes with everyone else, is to answer the second part of your question, to take the pieces of your life, the things you've accomplished and experienced, and write them down. Simply write them down in lists. I help with the book. There's different ways to do this. But to write down and to put in front of you the different things that make you unique, your fingerprint, and you can find your expertise in that.
Arlen, what's your expertise?
I may have a few. I think the most is I'm really great at bringing people together for a common cause and leading that group to a certain point.
Will you take a few more minutes and just expand on what exactly Backstage Capital is? What do you do? Who do you invest in? How do you invest? I mean, I don't know anybody that doesn't have some dream of a side hustle, some dream of someday expanding and wanting to grow their business. They may need seed capital. Take a few minutes and describe, like, practically, maybe demystify the world of venture capital for some listeners. How does it work and what do you do?
Sure. So venture capital, we raise money from institutions, high net worth individuals, insurance companies, endowments from colleges, et cetera. And so from people who are looking to diversify their own portfolios, but major amounts of money. It's a lot of money being spent in venture capital, but it's also a very small sliver of private equity in general. And it's this capital is meant to be spent on the moonshot ideas, the big innovative ideas. It's not to be treated the same way as a lot of private equity, which is very later stage and very kind of buttoned up. And then there are different stages of venture capital. There's early stage to later stage, going closer to the IPOs. And so I'm in early stage venture capital, which is like the riskiest place you can be in this asset class. And so I go out, I take the money raised. I mentioned Mark Cuban, but we've also had multiple other people and institutions and funds invest in us. I take that capital. My team and I go out and we find and have come to us through different means, high potential companies. And we do the legwork of looking at these companies, every single one that comes to us or that we go out to, looking through them and taking them through different stages of diligence depending on our interest in them. And then we make bets. So we've seen more than 10,000 companies in the last decade to invest in about 200 of them. And I think that number is actually a little bit higher because I think we invest in maybe a 1% of what we see. And so we do that on a day-to-day basis, and then we nurture them. So you're planting seeds, and then you're nurturing those seeds, watering them with resources, with guidance. You're a small part of their story, their overall story, but you're there as much as you can be. And then you do hope that over time, and you know, it's your job, to have a portfolio-wide returns on investment. So about 50% of the companies are going to die out. That's just kind of the statistic. But you're looking for those ones that outlast and outpace the rest to bring back the entire fund, and then hopefully on top of that have returns, higher returns. Having said all of that, I am very much excited about investing. I've been doing it for a decade. It's my life's work and my calling. But a bigger piece to this is that I want to help create 1,000 new millionaires, and I want to do that through education, media, et cetera, where they're making those millions from generating revenue and having sustainable companies and not necessarily creating those millionaires through investment alone.
Arlen, indulge me. I want to go a little bit deeper because this is like a masterclass for a lot of, you know, visionary solopreneurs that are looking to build their companies. Are most of your opportunities inbound versus outbound? Can you just give us an idea of kind of what is a typical level of investment and what kind of things should people be tightening up and buttoning down if they're searching for a venture capital infusion?
So Backstage Capital, my venture fund, is a little different than most funds. And we there are some funds that do this too now because of our example. But most venture funds do not have an application process like we do. So we have a large top of funnel. So you can go to backstagecapital.com if you feel you are ready to talk to us. You can go to the site, see what we invest in, see if your company is the right company, and apply, and then we have a 60-person apprenticeship team that looks through all of the applications and then surfaces the ones for the partners to take a look at. So that's very different than most funds. Most funds, it's a warm introduction that's needed, or they find you in trade papers or in events, and they come seeking you. And in either case, I mean, you're going to have to deal with both types of investors, and we certainly have partners in the ecosystem that do that. In either case, the big deal is to be so great at what you do that you're undeniable, that you don't even need venture capital, which is counterintuitive, but to be in a position where you don't need VCs or investors is usually when the VCs and investors come running towards you.
Super helpful. Your book, is organized into five sections. The first component is the audacity of you. It's where you speak about radical self-belief and uncovering your expertise. The next section is called the importance of ownership. Part three is many, M-A-N-Y, many, M-I-N-I, many, many empires. Part four, redefining success. And part five, catalyzing. You write about owning the wealth you create. Are there any insights, principles, life lessons you've learned that you can teach people about what it means to actually own the wealth you create?
Yeah, some cautionary tales have involved very early on, even before I started backstage, when I was, as I could say, broke. there was an opportunity. Someone offered me $7,000 to help me out, but also in exchange for a future percentage of my income. And I know that sounds probably outrageous to you right now, but it's actually was a startup that was out that was doing that anyway. And so that's where they got the idea. It doesn't exist anymore, but it was something that people were thinking about. And you can think of it now as like indentured servitude. It's not the greatest idea, but at the time, $7,000 was everything to me when I couldn't put together two nickels, right? And I called a friend of mine who is a black woman who was a director who I just knew because I was in LA. And I just wanted to get her advice. I also wanted to see if she wanted to invest the same. And she said, Arlen, don't you dare do that. Do you know how valuable you will be, your income will be over time? And this is, she was saying this to me, and I, you know, was relatively homeless. I was sleeping out of an Airbnb at the time and didn't know next week to the other. So I couldn't quite imagine the world that she was imagining. But do you know that if I had taken that money, I did take her advice, and if I had taken that money, it would have been worth hundreds of thousands of dollars today. And I'm just getting started. And so to me, that's really where it stems from, is that and also in your business. If you're looking for a venture, so many people are looking for venture capital. They want that quick hit, but they don't realize that that money is fleeting, but the transaction is not. And so you're diluting yourself and your ownership and your equity by selling pieces of your company. So it has to be made very soberly and very precisely, these decisions that you make.
Arlen, your book is rife with great practical principles based on things you've done well, things that you've failed at. You have a concept you call, don't count on the money until it's in the bank. Most seasoned leaders have a story about that. What's your story that supports this chapter, don't count the money until it's in the bank?
Oh, I have so many. I have so many. But one of them is so interesting. So we, Backstage Capital, we've always kind of struggled to raise. And so whenever we get these bigger hits, it's really exciting. So we had a group that was going to invest $5 million into Backstage's operations at a time when we really needed that. And that would have lasted us years at the time. There were tears shed in the boardroom when this was decided. There was a lot of celebration. And the only thing that was left was I was supposed to meet with the president of this company, the CEO of this company. We were supposed to sign the paperwork and kind of a press sort of thing and then shake hands. And it was going to be this photo op. And they were going to be traveling in a couple of weeks later. when that was supposed to happen, I wake up to the news that person has been arrested for fraud and that the entire company has been rocked to its core. Now, this is a multi-billion dollar company and a very famous and infamous case. And that person, I don't know if I can say their name, but that person was arrested and is now on the run, is like in hiding, and the deal just went up in smoke. $5 million to a company that could have used that for years, and so I learned a hard lesson very quickly because that was, for all intents and purposes, was ready to be signed.
I learned a similar lesson about maybe 9 years ago. And I only had to learn that lesson once, hopefully, right, for all of us. So many great chapters in this book. Creating winners everywhere. Choosing your collaborators carefully. Matchmaking. Building your team. Your network is currency. Getting into the room. calling on experts, chasing impact, not unicorns. Success is meant to be shared. Will you just take one of those that you're super passionate about, that you think people may have a misnomer about or a misconception or confused about, and riff on it? Pick any of those you'd like.
Well, the last one you said, success is meant to be shared. I mean, that's big. That's like the running theme in my career. And one way that I've done that is I did open up the ability to invest in Backstage's management company in 2021. So now there are about 6,500 people who co-own Backstage Capital. It was the first time that's been done in the country. And I don't even know if it's been done. I think it's been done in Europe, but this is the first time it's been done in the country. And we had to kind of create a path for it. It was very heavy lift to make it happen. But I am bullish on Backstage Capital. I've put all of my own personal resources into Backstage year after year after year to make it work, because I believe that there will be a big payoff, because I believe in these founders. And so I just imagine, the same way I imagined it existing at all, I imagine once it existed, what success looked like and who do I want to be there with me when it happens. And I didn't want to be alone or just have a few partners that got to indulge in this. And that's what really happens in most venture funds. And so I think we opened up a new category of venture fund when we did that. I think we broke ground somewhere. And the average investment was $749. Now it ranged. It certainly ranged to the high six figures. But people could put in $100 in a Reg CF, regulation crowdfund. And now they own a piece of our management co, which again, the previous times that this has happened where the management co has been sold pieces of, it's been to billion-dollar funds in exchange for one or two people getting that ownership. So it's pretty exciting.
Arlen, you've written a concept called knock down the stairway and build an elevator. What does that mean?
Well, it's a little bit of a riff on sending the elevator back down. And it's also in reference to a memory that I have with Chris Sacca, who you may remember was an early investor in Twitter and in Uber and a billionaire. He calls himself an accidental billionaire. He was on Shark Tank as well. And one time I wanted to meet him, and he was at an event. He was headlining this event. I didn't have any connections to him. I had talked to him a couple of times on email, but I really wanted to talk to him about my fund. And there was a black woman working there. I was the only black person in attendance at this event. There was a black woman working there at this event, and I said, I need to go meet this guy who's on stage right now. She didn't know him from Adam. She said, this elevator, without asking me any questions, she said, this elevator will take you up to where he's supposed to be next. He'll be getting his makeup done for an interview. It'll take you right there. It's a service elevator. She opened the service elevator for me and sent me right on up. And I was able to talk to Chris Sacca for 30 minutes, and he ended up investing in my fund along with his wife, all three of our first funds. So it's an ode to that, and it's about finding, hacking your way and finding your way creatively.
It's a great story. Arlen, you've been very vulnerable, courageous even, about your struggles. You talked today about your homelessness. You've written about and talked about extensively a previous addiction you have with alcohol, and your move beyond that. And it's interesting because you're on the cusp of something coming up that I think there may even be like a transition story there. To the degree you're comfortable, yeah, Talk a bit about your own struggles with addiction and how you have marshaled that recovery, that pivot, into an entrepreneurial opportunity. Is there a connection there? Talk about those two things.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so I'm very open about this. I have been sober for more than 6.5 years now. And that is, I'm just so proud of that, sober from alcohol. I was addicted to alcohol physically and emotionally and spiritually for almost 15 years. And drank every single day, unless I was very violently ill from something else. I drank every single day. I often chose it over food when I did have certain amounts of money. I mean, it got really bad towards the end. And I was still highly functional, though. That was the problem. I was very, very capable. always the person getting people in rides, at, you know, at the parties and all the things, like even that, and, but capable in business too. But I needed to change. I felt like I might even lose my life if I didn't make a big change fast enough. So I there's a book called This Naked Mind by Annie Grace, who's now a friend of mine. But I found this book one day, and 5 days after listening to it, I stopped drinking and haven't had a drink since. So just a remarkable turnaround, which I would have never believed before. But you know, you have your vices and you want to kind of have different things that you're into. So I moved on to the Diet Cokes of the world, and that was great. I drank Diet Coke for a long time, but then I wanted something different. So I actually, I'm starting, you're one of the first to hear about this, but I'm starting a new brand called Yacht Water. So excited. Call Yacht Water. There's like a whole reasoning behind it. But it's still and sparkling water, flavored and unflavored. And it's just a beautiful design can and packaging. And it's going to be very special kind of rollout that we do.
Is it YACHT?
That's correct. Yacht Water.
Yacht Water. And what else can you tell our listeners and viewers about when it's coming and where it will be and why they'll want to buy it?
We're going to actually launch it at my event, Your First Million Live, April 9th through the 12th in Los Angeles. And that'll be, if you're in the building at that event, you'll be able to taste it for the first time, which is why I'm so excited about it. But Yacht Water, there was a tweet in 2021. A friend of mine wrote a tweet and said, she was asking for a founder, a friend of hers. And the founder had an investor who had ghosted her. But then after they got some traction and got some press, they were chasing that person down, that founder down. And the founder wanted to know, how do you handle that kind of person? And I just replied tongue in cheek, splash them with your yacht water. Just meaning if let your success be the revenge, essentially. And it got a lot of traction for some reason. A lot of people liked that response. And it sort of stuck in my head as like, wow, that's actually a really cool take on things, and I can actually taste that. And so it just haunted me for a couple of years. And in the summer of 2023, I decided I want this to be a brand. I'm going to go for it. So I've gone for it. It's I love being an entrepreneur. You know, I'm an investor, a prolific investor, of course, trailblazing, but I get the most fun and value and fulfillment out of being an entrepreneur.
What a great story. I hope that story is on the back of that can or on the website, because that's going to give a lot of people.
Yeah, the website for sure.
Yes, that'll be viral.
You can go to yachtwater.com to check that out.
I love it. Arlen Hamilton, your current book is Your First Million, Why You Don't Have to Be Born into a Legacy of Wealth to Leave One Behind. You're a prolific investor, entrepreneur, speaker, water founder. What's next for you beyond Yacht Water? Is there a new book? What's on the horizon that you'd like to talk about today here?
Yeah, definitely think Your First Million Live is going to be put on the map very soon. You'll see it. Hopefully you'll be there. And then hirerunner.co, I think for this audience, it's a big deal. Like we're matching thousands and thousands of people with opportunities at Fortune 5000 companies all the way to solopreneurs. And I think it's a really great place to check out. And I'm happy to talk to anybody who's interested in any of these topics.
Arlen, thank you for giving us a second chance from our tech debacle the first time. Delighted we had you back on. Best of success to you.
Thank you so much.
And we'll see you back next week for a new conversation on leadership.